I don't like sand. It's coarse and rough and irritating, and it gets everywhere.
Hello and welcome back to the Droids You're Looking For, a Star Wars podcast. The Jedi Council of Hosts has returned with Chris, Sam, and Ryan. I am Mike, and this week the news is a bit light, so we're diving right back into our rewatch, where in this edition we discuss Episode 2, Attack of the Clones, a title that sounds so great, but the rewatch was a challenging one today as we went back and took a look at this movie one more time. When we get into this conversation, we're going to go deep and talk about everything, have all the usual characters involved, but I was racking my brain to try to find some memories about the buildup and the fanfare for this film. Does anyone remember it? Because I draw a blank compared to the last time when we talked about Phantom Menace and how much hype there was. I can't seem to recall it. So anybody that has any memories about when they saw this film in theater, please feel free to jump in.
I certainly do, as the prequel apologist.
I am interested.
First and foremost, I just want to give a shout out to all my droid heads out there. Sam, I want to congratulate you on being the new leader of your jizz band. I know that was a big deal for you, but
right.
I saw this movie three times opening week. I saw it on a Sunday, a Wednesday, and a Saturday. And I was in eighth grade, and I recall specifically saying to a peer, I like this movie better than Spider-Man, and I love Spider-Man. They came out in the same summer. It was a huge summer for Ryan. And yeah, I remember I saw it at Brookhaven Movie Theater. Shout out to Brookhaven, Long Island, a defunct movie theater as well, a ghost town. And I saw it in an empty movie theater opening week of Star Wars, which doesn't really speak to Attack of the Clones as much as it speaks to the state of the Brookhaven Movie Theater at the time.
Ah, right.
Maybe the state of the Phantom Menace.
Well, yes, perhaps. But yeah, I remember loving it. I mean, there are specific things in the movie that I'm sure we will get to, but I did see it three times. I think every single time alone. So that also speaks to the state of Ryan in eighth grade.
I'm just gonna piggyback on one thing you said, Ryan, which is that you extolling this movie's virtues over Spider-Man. It was Spider-Man 2, right?
No, Spider-Man 1.
Spider-Man 1? Okay. Yeah.
This movie didn't have Macy Gray in it, granted, I understand.
The exact same debate where I had, except from the opposite side, I could not fathom how someone thought this was better than Spider-Man at the time. I remember, you know, I remember being excited to see it. I remember I remember seeing in a magazine at Suncoast Video that Obi-Wan was going to have long hair, which I didn't dig.
Was it like a shot of him on like a black background?
Yes, it's exactly that.
I remember seeing that same exact image. I know what you're talking about.
It was a promotional photo. I mean, it might have even been. It didn't look like a promo photo. It looked like a costume test.
Right.
You know,
yeah.
It was just like for no one. But they put it in every magazine.
But Sam, you were totally on board with the hair of Liam Neeson and the long hair of Qui-Gon, but you were on board for the long hair of Obi-Wan.
Well, they didn't do the little, like, I don't know. He had it pulled different. Look, listen, like, you know.
Does Sam categorically hate long hair, or is it a context thing? Let's really dig into it.
Well, it really depends on what Tom Cruise's hair looks like in the Mission Impossible series.
Well, I'm going to say that the short-haired Mission Impossible movies have historically been better than the long-haired ones.
Exactly.
However, you know, that's different than, say, Desperado, where the long hair looked amazing on young Antonio.
So I don't want to get too much into the weeds on this. I don't want to get too much into the weeds on this, but Ghost Protocol was a long-haired mission.
I know. I said
gotta break the mold sometime.
I said most of them. Anyway, no, I remember having that exact debate. That seemed to be the talk was like, you know, comparing Spidey and Attack of the Clones, and I came down Spidey, man.
Wow, I was completely. I mean, I can't even rack my brain to think that Spider-Man came out in the same year versus Star Wars. Like, I didn't even know there was a battle going on there. Spider-Man, obviously a great movie. Attack of the Clones, obviously a movie. I think I was just as excited as any other Star Wars movie, but I feel like this was when I felt the drop off. Like, as a kid, everyone else was super excited for Phantom Menace, and then all of a sudden I was bringing people to see Attack of the Clones. It wasn't like, yeah, we're all gonna do this. It was kind of like, do you want to go with this to me, or do you want to go with me to this?
There is also a there's just noticing the trajectory here. There is a sort of beautiful tragedy to this, a classic buildings roman, if you will, of how at Phantom Menace, we talked about how we were all too young to know what a bad movie was.
Oh, right.
And when this movie came out, it seems like everyone, save for me, knew that it was a bad movie.
Right. It was
those were very formative years.
Right. It was cathartic.
Those were when Peter Pan grew up, except
I would say it
I'm
was
still
it,
flying around.
It was for me, Ryan, you know, it was a different sense than I have now. You know, seeing, like, when I see a bad movie now, I analyze it much differently, and I have different reasons. This was a movie where it was like, I knew I didn't like it as much as the first one, which was rare, because normally, like, every sequel was bigger and better, you know?
Yeah,
like, that's sort of the
sequel's always the best.
Yeah, that's sort of how it works. And so I knew that I didn't like this one as much as the first. I knew that I thought, you know, where we get in the film, which when we actually break it down, we'll talk about, you know, the Yoda fight. Oh, I love that. I love certain stuff. But I just didn't come out of this one excited about Star Wars, which is insane.
There might be one big reason for that, that no matter the age, you could have felt and known, and we can get into Hayden later, but I would have to think that no matter how old you were, you knew something was off. Maybe you didn't realize it was all horrible, but you knew something wasn't quite right.
Right.
This is also the movie that cemented, like, outliers in terms of bad writing and bad acting, and made them defining qualities.
Right. I remember I had this I had this weird buildup to Hayden Christensen because my cousin at the time was really into the TV show that he was on, that Canadian, like, camp show. I don't know the name of it.
I didn't even know he was on a Canadian camp.
Yeah,
show.
So he was on this, like, Canadian teen show, and my cousin was way into
it.
No, it wasn't Degrassi. It was, like, I can't remember it, but he was, like, at a camp or something. And so it was kind of like, oh, he's going to be the next Darth Vader. And then I saw him, and then I was kind of like, oh.
Him?
Him?
Higher Ground?
Higher Ground, that's it, yes.
Jake Lloyd certainly had a more rugged look.
Right.
Hey, just, this is an interesting fact, curated for me by the lovely folks at Wikipedia. That show was also starring a young man named Joe Lando.
Oh.
Oh.
That's where he got the idea to be.
Wonder if that's
Star
why
Wars.
He got the job.
Yeah. Wait a second. You know Joe Lando? This has been Lando Talk on the Droid.
I do have to add, though, last time you all went through and gave your local theaters some love. I did not. I forgot to do that. And I do want to say Yorktown 17 outside of Chicago in the suburbs is where I saw The Phantom Menace, and I did likely see Attack of the Clones, even though I don't remember it. The one thing I do remember about being in the theater, not necessarily my only experience, was that how loud everyone cheered the moment that Yoda walked in, knowing mm-hmm. that he was about to partake in a lightsaber battle. That's the only memory I have of seeing that movie in the theaters. And I felt the excitement as well. I didn't quite feel it when I watched it again.
But you do have to admit, like, in a theater, and I'm not saying that you're saying otherwise, Mike.
Yeah.
But in a theater setting, that is, like, a dope movie moment.
Absolutely. Yeah.
With at that point, it was 35 years of build. It was 2002, right? So 35 years of buildup.
The only
25
Yoda
years, excuse
Yoda
me.
Could barely move before that, like, literally physically. Like, he was just kind of shaking around, and then all of a sudden we see him. The most, like, the coolest part is when he just, like, grabs his lightsaber without reaching for it. But it's like, that lightsaber is, like, less than a foot away from you, Yoda. You don't really need to waste that kind of energy.
Oh, he's
tiny.
Building up. He's a showman.
He's a showman.
I mean, truly, though. I mean, I'm realizing this now as I'm speaking, but Yoda is kind of a showman. He never is. He never is as he appears to be. He loves putting on a little ruse.
So what you're saying is he was the Prestige before the Prestige ever came
out.
As
he was
a movie.
The old man carrying the fish tank between his legs.
There's, exactly. There's actually two Yodas in the whole series. spoiler alert. I specifically remember I saw this at a Clarion movie theater. I don't know what it was, one of the first digital screens. So last Phantom Menace, I mentioned that I saw it in digital audio. This
Lucas
was a digital,
approved.
Lucas approved. This was a digital screen. So this was digital cinema for the first movie I had seen, one of the first ones. And I got to admit that I walked into the wrong theater and saw about the middle of the movie. sat down and looked up, and it was Christopher Lee flying on that thing down the cliff.
Oh, man, like, well, doing this that is a shot that doesn't work in any movie.
This is a weird way to start a movie. No credits or anything. And I realized,
Lucas has really thrown out the rule book on this one.
So we saw that.
All right, well, let's move into the aggressive negotiation portion of this podcast and start with the aspects that we... Let's say let's go with what we did like. Let's try to keep it positive for as long as possible. So let's start off, and Sam, I'm going to start with you and talk about some of the things you liked about this movie, despite I know there being a lot more to say on the negative side.
Man, Mike, I'm so glad you started with me, and I'm prepared with all my positives right to go. The immediate thing that comes to mind, I think we've all touched on Yoda, so I won't belabor that, but that is really like the thing that you, at least when you know you're in eighth grade, you remember coming out of that movie is, you know, it was some of the, you know, more fastest and most active like CG work and it built on the character building that, you know, they did with the Jar Jar Binks character in the first movie in terms of like quality of graphics and everything. And so it was, that was what one thing I remembered, and I think the other thing I remembered really loving was I was real into, well, it's funny because my perspective on this has changed also, but I was real into Jango Fett at the time, and it was because essentially Jango Fett was, you know, making right the failures of Boba Fett in Return of the Jedi. You know, he had this mystique, he had this fan, you know, favorite status, and then kind of gets, you know, dismissed so gracelessly. And so they built up this character who had this mystique. And I don't remember the actor's name who plays him, but he's turned up, you know, a lot. And I think, you know, he did a great job as this character Jango. You got the fight you wanted, and it was essentially a Boba Fett fight because their armor's the same, you know, the Mandalorian armor. So, you know, that is, and that probably is the scene that today holds up for me as my favorite scene in the movie, is the Obi-Wan Jango fight on Kamino. Mm-hmm. As just like the part I enjoy the most, and it's because I like Ewan McGregor, I like lightsaber fights, I think, you know, Jango / Boba Fett is cool. I just, you know, I wish there was a way it could have just been Boba Fett, you know, make him ageless or something, but I like that. And then I'm just trying to run through really quick.
Well, hey, Sam, let's come back to you because we know that Ryan has a lengthy list. And I was throwing you on the spot right there, but let's go with Ryan, and then we'll go over to Chris, and we'll work it around.
Perfect.
Well, okay, so first and foremost, the chemistry between Hayden and Natalie Portman is the kind of chemistry you could only get from two people who are technically alive. So
that's good stuff, Ryan.
Incredible. But
would that be the lead of your review if you had written a review of this?
Yeah. Portman and Christensen, by all accounts, are breathing. No, okay, so I know that I'm not...
Academy
guys,
Award winner, Natalie.
You know
Portman.
What I mean? Like, I know what's going on. I know why people don't like it. I know all these things. But let me start with things that I certainly like. I love the Coruscant chase. I think it's great. It's very exciting. we'd never seen like a cityscape explored like that in a Star Wars movie. That was like a huge step in technology. Very exciting. Mm-hmm. Hayden Christensen going, tell us, please. And then screaming, tell us now. Really let us know. This guy, he's got some anger issues. And so that's foreshadowing.
So you like that? That part is that's a.
I'm just saying it's there, but sure. There's certainly a sag in the middle. You know, the whole like sand gets everywhere. Listen,
Can you define the middle of the movie? Is it from second two to second, the second before it ends?
This movie is a lot of middle. There's a whole lot of middle in this movie, but no, I mean for real though, I think I like the Geonosis fight a lot. That's, if you could hear that, it's the cops coming for me. This is a very unpopular opinion. Okay, so I think that the Geonosis fight is very cool. I think that technology-wise, it was really a step forward. I understand that John Carter was very derivative of it. I don't know. People seem to get mad at Star Wars when that happened, which seems strange to me. But I think, the star of the show is the Yoda fight. That's like a huge thing. I think that whole sequence is really amazing. There's my favorite bad Yoda line, which is like where they just kind of like push past the precipice of putting things backwards, where the line is around the survivors a perimeter create, which I just think is like one too many double backs on itself, yeah, which is kind of magic.
If you look at the stormtroopers, kind of their reactions when he says that, they're kind of like, what?
Yeah. I think the design of Kamino is amazing as well. I think the design of the aliens is great. I think that the answer for like where the stormtroopers came from, even though people don't like that, I think is interesting. And like, I don't mind it at all. I understand that it is kind of fan service because he took this kind of extended universe character of Boba Fett that people love so much and was like, I'm going to put him front and center. So, you know, George Lucas has done that. I am legitimately shocked with the lack of subtlety that he's had with those kind of things, that there's no line in the movie where Jango Fett is like, what do we hate Boba? And Boba's like, Sarlacc pits or something. But I think that visually this movie, even though Phantom Menace was like a huge step forward for movies in general, I think in terms of building a world, this movie was kind of a huge leap as well. That doesn't really get the credit it deserves. The amount of different environments that we visit in this one is really amazing. We'll get into the bad stuff. There's obviously plenty. I just think that this movie gets like an undue beating because I understand that it does lag and stuff like that, but there is still great Star Wars stuff in it.
Well, it probably gets that beating though as well because of what you talked about. The chemistry and the dialogue between those two is just so overwhelming for the whole movie that it makes it tough to see anything else.
And it did people could pass it off on Jake Lloyd in the last one a little bit. I don't remember thinking the acting was bad when I saw episode one. I was young, but I also, you know, you can kind of smell that stuff. But with episode two, I remember being like, uh-oh, this seems to be a trend.
But I'm going to just jump back. So you feel that I get from the standpoint of like world building, the idea of having all these new environments and things that we haven't yet seen in Star Wars is exciting. I don't think it was not well executed for me. Like I would actually put that as a big strike against this movie, because I just think like when you look at, you know, Phantom Menace, another prequel that's heavily CGI, a lot of like new environments being created. Like I think that movie looks 10 times better than this one personally. I don't know.
It's almost like they were pushing it a little too hard with the CG stuff. But I mean, they were so deep into it. Like it was. That was, I think, one of the purposes of this movie was like, I mentioned it with Phantom Menace, but it's like, look at what we can do. We'll probably do a lot of this stuff in the third one and it'll look better.
Well, this was the first movie shot entirely digital.
I think you're
a big deal.
Yeah, I think you're correct in that. And they were like building a lot of the technology. I will agree that I think the car chase, the city, the hover car chase, that scene is amazing. I still would say to this day there's not a scene like that in all of cinema.
Wait, let me jump in then, because I was going to say this to Ryan. Isn't it reminiscent of the Fifth Element for all of us?
I was just going to say except Fifth Element, but of course. No, but I mean, as far as the scope of it goes, like Fifth Element looks kind of like puppeteering. This thing looks pretty much like a seamless world, and we get to dig into Coruscant, which we like somehow we heard about, but after the original trilogy, like, I don't know why I know what Coruscant is. Do you? Is it no, because of the Phantom Menace?
It took me forever to realize that, like, this planet we were on the whole time was, like, the Coruscant they were talking about.
Yeah, like, I never quite understood why I knew about it, but I wanted to know.
We spent a good amount of time on Coruscant in the Phantom Menace.
That's true. This is true. But even before that, I feel like I knew a little bit about the planet. I think some cool things that happen. The mention of Sifo Dyas as a Jedi who, like, ordered the clones, right? That, to me, was super interesting because that actually added a little bit of mystery to the whole series, which I don't think was there. Like, it was reminiscent of when Obi-Wan talked about the Clone Wars in the original movie. It was kind of like, oh, who is this guy? Why is he ordering this army? Little did I know that it would be explained like 20 minutes later and not be this satisfying. But I think that they were trying really hard to add these little details. And the only other thing that wasn't mentioned yet was the cool like light speed ring on the Jedi Starfighter. I thought that was a neat detail to kind of show the progression of technology. Like,
I really like that.
That's the only way they can get through. I think it starts to really the movie starts to fall apart pretty fast.
So you're just, that's where you're done at that point.
I feel like from a technological standpoint, riding those aliens, that I don't think I've ever seen anything like that when they're like in the they're in the Gladiator pit, which Gladiator just came out like 2 years before this movie. So I feel like there might have been a little influence there.
Along what you're talking about, Chris, and I'll set this up to all of you, is that do you think the CGI of Attack of the Clones holds up as well or better than Phantom Menace? Or is Phantom Menace the better one in terms of the CGI? Because when I was watching it, I thought the CGI looked much worse on characters that we had seen in the Phantom Menace that somehow they aged better.
I think that they were reaching for more. The one that stands out to me the most is when they make CGI C-3PO. It looks like it's hard to watch. The whole C-3PO. I know we're not. Are we supposed to get into the bad stuff? Because
go ahead and start us, and I'm gonna. I'll get back to my.
The line is so thin.
I do want to give. You guys are both. The one thing I do really like about that opening chase on Coruscant is I do think that Ewan McGregor makes that scene.
Right.
Sing and like they like he delivers his dialogue and like. His comedy timing is like spot on, and it really sets up like a funny dynamic of that pays off more in episode 3 with like Obi-Wan being uncomfortable with Anakin's confidence and recklessness. Like that scene, I don't actually think it looks as good as maybe you guys feel, but I think that works for me, the dialogue.
Also, when Obi-Wan is going through the power of conflicts, the audio on that is insane sounding. If you listen to that, it's like they distorted your speakers or something. Like it sounds fuzzy on purpose. It's really cool.
I'll have to look for that next time. Whenever I pop this in. Never.
This was the second DVD I ever bought.
Oh.
And what was the first?
It was good. The first was Good Will Hunting.
Oh.
Very.
So one of those has aged well.
Yes.
I'll leave you to guess which one.
So I'll say the last thing about the Coruscant chase scene is that I actually think as well as Obi-Wan worked, there was a moment where I'm like, oh, okay, that's not a bad joke when Hayden Christensen is saying, oh, I had to take time to pick my speeder. I couldn't find a speeder I liked. I'm like, oh, that's kind of funny. And then it kept going. And he's like, well, it didn't have the open roof, and I need it. I'm like, cut it there. You don't need more to the joke.
Yeah, they're not really not really stitch-ups.
Which
Jedi.
Is really, it's really weird, because George Lucas in life is so funny.
So funny. I've listened to him in person at least 3 times, and it hasn't droned on and on at all. I will say the few things. I mean, I agree. I thought Coruscant, it was cool to explore Coruscant a little bit more. Like seeing Kamino, reiterate what you were saying there. The lake was beautiful at Naboo. None of the scenes were good. Didn't want to see any scenes there.
The lake is beautiful, but the sand gets everywhere.
It gets everywhere. It's coarse.
What about those floating apples?
I love...
Oh.
I loved the moment where he's in the club, because for some reason it's not called a cantina, oddly enough, when they run in there, that the guy is Obi-Wan uses the Jedi Force mind trick on him, and he says, you know, I don't want to sell you my death sticks. I want to go home and rethink my life. I thought that was hilarious. It was just one quick throwaway joke. I'll go back to the Jango Fett fight. I loved that scene, as you said, Sam, and I liked everything that was in there. But I also thought there were some moments where, okay, this looks great, and then there was like a cheesy fall from Obi-Wan. And there was one part where there was a flying jump kick from Obi-Wan where he uses the Force to kick Jango. And I don't know, have any of you seen Kingsman 2?
Yes. No.
I have not. The first? No.
I thought you meant Kingsman also.
Oh, no. Has anyone seen the second Kingsman? There's a moment where a character flies in the midair, kicks someone, turns to the camera, and smiles, and there's a little flash off of his teeth. I kind of thought that was going to happen if I slowed down and did a freeze frame. Other things that
why don't we side by side that with what the real Force kicks look like?
Right.
Yeah.
did that come out more aggressive than I meant?
No.
Oh, God.
A little strange.
Thanks for having me on my last episode.
This is it.
Other things, Sam Jackson. I think he's great. I think he's underutilized. Oh, yeah. I wanted more of Sam Jackson. The moment that's really stood out to me that really felt, I remembered how I felt when I saw it the first time, was the arrival of the Jedi on Geonosis, when Mace Windu's feet are shown and he's slowly walking up to the spot where Dooku is. I remember getting so excited and welled up like, this is what we've been waiting for. Full-on battle with many Jedi. Yeah. This is what I've wanted to see.
The scope of that battle, I feel, is pretty cool. Regardless of who's fighting in it, just visually, it looks pretty. It looks like concept art that's come to life, which is pretty neat. I think that was a good thing and a bad thing. Yeah, but I feel like it was a pretty pure vision there with the huge ships like floating in the air and all that stuff. It's a lot of cool visuals there.
A lot of the action scenes in this movie are multi-layered. Even the Coruscant chase, you could tell that they set, like, you could almost hear them in a meeting being like, this is going to be a car chase with multiple layers of verticality to it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, George Lucas is, and we spoke about this on the last episode as well, he is really skilled at that.
Mm-hmm.
It's just something he's amazing at, is spectacle. And I'm sure we'll be talking about it a lot more in Revenge of the Sith, because there's a ton of it in that. But I think that this still has those moments as well.
Which I can even give some credit to the assembly droid line, where it's Padme and Anakin, even though it's not the best sequence that he's created. I still feel like I knew what was happening. I still felt the tension. You know, there's enough going on in that sequence that even if it isn't the best action sequence in Star Wars, it's still well executed nonetheless.
The whole C-3PO thing.
Well, sorry. That part is not. I was focusing more on Padme.
You're right.
The racist overtones are cut down a little bit. I mean, that's something that we didn't get deep into, but we discussed last time that there were some issues with the treatment of characters and them being stereotypes, and it didn't feel like it was as prominent in this movie. And otherwise, you know, I think that Jar Jar being the one who brings the end of democracy at least felt fitting that a character we all hated so much was the one that would give over power to Palpatine.
Sure. Yeah, I'm surprised none of us had mentioned that before, that they did kind of vindicate Jar Jar by making him ruin the galaxy.
Or vindicate him in our minds.
It is technically all his fault.
Yeah. Which is when he becomes back as Snoke. We're all going to love it.
Andy!
Boy.
Last thing I'll have is on a positive side is that the younglings being trained by Yoda, thought it was fun, like that they helped out to find the planet. I did think it was a bit negligent to let kids use lightsabers. I know they're gifted with the Force, but I thought it was a little bit much.
I'm glad you brought that up. I love that scene. Yeah. I think that the characterization of Yoda in that scene, a character who we know well already, I think is beautiful. The way that he interacts with everybody and his kind of mischievous nature, which, as we said, is kind of inherent to Yoda. He's putting on an act. He's a little bit of a ham.
Yeah, I'm glad those kids are having a good time now.
Also, I think we haven't really mentioned this. I think that the sequence where Anakin goes to find his mother and then slaughters the sand people is very, very dark and a little disturbing. I think it works.
Well, so I want to talk about that scene.
This is a good bridge. It's a bridge between our two topics. I like it.
What's going on with Clegg Lars, Owen's dad? So that dude. Okay. Yeah.
There's some issues that dude going has on in that family.
That dude has a kid, Owen, from his first marriage.
Right. Owen of Uncle Owen and Aunt Peru.
Right.
Then he marries Shmi, presumably, you know, when she's, you know, off her slave duties.
Well, and technically, then, he is the one who bought her and then freed her.
I understand what you're saying. It's unclear whether he bought her freedom or, like,
set her
fell in love with her after.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is unsettling.
Well, it's like, what happened to his first wife? And then what happens to his second wife when he just doesn't do anything? I think this guy is, like, really at the heart of, like, everything that happened.
Exactly.
And he kind of gets off scot-free. Like, that's the guy that Annie should have killed.
I can kind of understand why Anakin is so angry. Basically, it's like, why didn't you save my mom? Do you see what happened to her?
The Lars Family, A Star Wars Story, is our next standalone film.
That's right. Well, I mean, the next standalone definitely goes to Dax, but...
Well, all right. I want to go back to the scene you're talking about, though, Ryan, because that was on its own. If we would have seen that as the first kind of entry point into seeing his true evilness or ability to be evil, that would have worked. But when there was so much that was my early complaint when I was watching it is if the first movie, when I was talking about The Phantom Menace, I said gave us no inkling at all of the epitome of evil that Anakin would become, this movie decided to be the polar opposite and show you in every scene that he's evil and going to be Darth Vader. And so if they could have toned that down and this was this slow build, well, then he finally unleashes his anger in killing all of the sand people, that would have worked. But since they didn't do that, that scene falls a little bit for me.
So it's a little bit of like, this bowl is too hot, this bowl is too cold.
Exactly.
If you're looking,
Well,
George isn't that good at just right.
No.
We've been trained to hate the sand people also. And they did kidnap a woman. So
did they deserve to be mass murdered?
I guess he did come back. I also like how they had
not
to
just
say,
the men, Chris.
Yeah,
the women.
I like how he had to say that he did that.
They're dead. Every single one of them. And not just the men, but the women and the children too. They're like animals, and I slaughtered them like animals. I hate them.
Like, they didn't show it.
Which, if we're bringing this
also,
up now...
Also, I'll say, Padme really kind of... She just kind of accepts it.
Oh, yeah, that's like, that was my reaction where I thought, this is nothing I noticed when I was 14 or 15 when I saw this, but now... That's end of movie right there. End of series. Right. There's no way this relationship continues when he says,
right.
I killed
right.
and slaughtered the women and children. I slaughtered them like animals.
Right.
Yeah, she should be looking for exit strategy.
That's when she's kind of like, okay, I have to go return a robot.
No.
And then she goes away.
That floored me to hear that. That line and had not remembered it until watching it again, and I was just blown away. So that was a big problem for me.
I just remembered I'm a senator. I have to go.
I do want to say he gets just irrationally angry about her boyfriend when she was 9 years old at camp.
Right.
That's when their age difference really starts showing, is that he's not that far from 9 years old at that point.
Right.
And she's like, what are you getting upset about?
Yeah. Well,
I didn't sign a lease with this guy.
Here's one thing that my brother and I talked about a little bit was like, there's an opportunity here to have some kind of weird love triangle between Obi-Wan, Padme, and Anakin.
There is.
You're projecting your feelings about Obi-Wan onto this, though.
No, I mean, they alluded to it in the movie, right?
That's certainly what Anakin seems to think there's an opportunity for.
Right.
Actually,
and I mean, like, I don't understand.
Everybody sees it, but Padme.
Yeah,
open your eyes.
Right. But I feel like that could have been something in this movie that would have actually driven Anakin to hate the Jedi rather than something that didn't really relate to the Jedi.
I think I honestly, truly, I'm not trying to be mean here, Chris. I think that that reasoning would be as thin as the reasoning that's given.
Really?
Yeah, it's like that Obi-Wan is in a love triangle, and so he hates the entire Jedi. I think people would have gone after that reason as well. They would have been like, that's thin.
There's no right way out of this death trap, but but I feel like it's a stronger reason than him just being sad.
I think the scene where he goes after the Tusken Raiders, I think the woman who plays Shmi in both these movies, I think, does a really good job. I think it was like well cast. I think she's a good performer.
It's almost like she's like, the last time I left you, we were all still acting, right?
But like,
she's like, guys, hello.
What happened?
She does good. So for I a think like that named Shmi.
That one, it's the best Shmi since Hook. I'll tell you what.
Yeah, there it is. Bob Hoskins passed on this role.
No, I think that, you know, that relationship, you know, worked well enough for me. It's the dialogue that Hayden Christensen had to work with, paired with just he was out of his depth on what they were trying to get, you know, those lines in this character
this
to carry.
This was not happening,
you
know, on higher ground.
Chris, we're not there yet, Chris. We're not there.
Oh, jeez.
No, I mean the TV series that Hayden was in. It was not happening. Wasn't the depth stretch.
Oh, wow. That was like a triple entendre.
It was.
It really was.
I wasn't reaching for it.
I do want to go back to the one thing about Smee, or the actress who played Smee. I thought she did a really good job until she had her flinging of the head backwards after she died.
Sure,
that was
sure,
maybe yeah. one of the worst deaths I've seen in film.
since the stormtroopers just jumped off the bridge in the Death Star.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. They could have added a Wilhelm scream when she died. Could have made it.
So I'm going to bring up just like another, a sort of tangential thing is that I was sort of saying just a little bit earlier, you know, before we started on the podcast, I was saying to you guys that I actually think just in even watching this movie recently, I'm getting back to weak points, even watching this and really, really thinking about it, like the plot of this movie is so much more confusing than it needs to be, I think. And like, I found myself having, I, you know, taking the train home, I was just making notes to like actually track the beats of the story. And, you know, when you have the idea of Attack of the Clones, the Clone Wars being, you know, some disagreement over the use of clones and or a clone army, like that's enough. That sells this movie. And that's a story that works without a lot of fleshing out, you know?
Yeah, sure.
And yet, like, I was trying to follow the entire thing that Count Dooku's trying to do is he hires an assassin to kill Padme that fails when they blow up the ship and kill her decoy. Then he hires another assassin who fails and then gets killed by another assassin who's either hired as a backup to take out that assassin or who was the one that was originally hired, and like Django just like subcontracted this deal down to the person who they killed.
I think that's it. The subcontract.
So, first of all, I'd be like, give me my money back, man. I hired you. I didn't hire like one of your lackeys to go do this. Mm-hmm. But then they track Django, which is revealed the idea of, that's when you first get to the idea of the clones. But then you also realize that Dooku is apparently putting together a droid army with everybody's favorite Newt Gunray. and then you also find out that he's the one who is delivering the Death Star plans to Darth Sidious. Mm-hmm. So it's like Dooku's doing like 19 things,
right?
Like two of which are actually like plot advancements. And then the rest are like,
yeah,
tricks to get him out. It's convoluted.
It's also for a character that we see like an hour and 45 minutes into the movie.
I feel sick, you guys. I have a headache. I can't.
I'm so confused.
Yeah. I don't know what's so complicated. You just explained it beautifully.
I don't understand. Oh, there's also a Senate battle happening, too, that allows war, does not.
Where am I, guys? I just blacked out for the last 5 minutes. What happened?
Who is voting in that Senate?
Jar Jar.
And Jar Jar. It's just Jar Jar. Oh, because he takes executive authority.
Which, once again, something happens in the Senate that there's no discussion of. There's just someone who proposes something, and immediately the Senate acts and says, sure, Chancellor is now an emperor.
Exactly. Is just like an Easter egg, are the E.T. aliens in Attack of the Clones, or are they in the Revenge?
They're in Phantom.
They're in Phantom as well?
I only saw them in Phantom. I didn't see them in Attack of the Clones.
There is
could only get them in one movie before Universal just sued their asses off.
Yeah, it's one of the binding things between E.T., Indiana Jones, and Star Wars. It is the most complicated of all of the Star Wars movies.
Guys, I'm realizing it as Sam was describing the plot that man, this movie's a little bit messy, isn't it?
I was trying to think of what could make it I was trying to think of a way to simplify it in a tagline, but there's really nothing. It is definitely an in-between thread between two movies. And it takes place 10 years after Phantom.
The way to simplify it is to say, our hero, the righteous Jedi Obi-Wan Kenobi, discovers a plot to build an army of clones that's unsanctioned, and it causes the fracturing of the Galactic Senate. That sounds like an amazing movie.
You might still need to fit that on a poster.
The other 2 hours and 10 minutes.
right. Yeah, I think. Yeah, they were just trying to pack too much in.
I'm realizing that I've watched these movies, the prequels especially, because they are so convoluted. I think I apply a little bit of a dream logic to them when I'm watching them. I'm just letting them happen. If you could see the look on my face in the theater, it's imagine someone has been locked in a bunker for 40 years, and then they go to Times Square. Whatever their look is, that's the look I have.
Smiling, just looking at it, nodding
your head.
A little
bit scared. Yeah.
So you're sort of the Steve Rogers of this scenario. is that what we're supposed to is that whatever all our listeners are supposed to picture?
Right. First off, Sam, thank you. but yeah, that's pretty much it.
Well, I think also another point just to bring up is that Dooku and the cast of aliens that he's with are the most generic aliens ever created.
Are you talking about the guys from Geonosis?
Not the Geonosis guys, but the people around the table. We never see any types of their kind ever before or after.
You mean the half Frankenstein, half gob of goo?
There's so many lame creatures there. The one that has to adjust his volume or something.
That's the one I'm talking about. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
I think it's very generic feeling, to almost to the point where they're just we have all these extra models. What do? Throw them in there.
That's probably exactly what happened.
I do want to go back
I worked for the cantina.
I want to go back to the
Rick
dialogue.
McCullough was I found this on one of George's cocktail napkins. We have to put it in the movie.
The dialogue obviously being such a big problem, but one thing that I didn't realize until I went back and watched it was that there's a number of times where Anakin is just straight out creepy in terms of Padme in dialogue, saying she covered the cameras. I don't think she liked me watching her. Okay. Peeping Tom kind of style for him. Other times it kind of came up. I mean, I just felt so uncomfortable listening to him speak to her throughout the movie that I was beginning to think that, no one sees him as kind of being a predator in this film. And
she says, "You're making me uncomfortable." And he says, "Sorry." And then stares up down his eyebrows, Clockwork Orange.
Oh yeah.
A very extended shot before a classic Star Wars circle wipe.
Well, he's Darth Vader, guys. So let's remember that.
That is true. I mean, what are we trying to say, that this guy isn't going to end up being a good guy?
Right.
Yeah, I think. Yeah.
Oh no.
I got it.
No, this is what this movie does, you guys. This is what it does.
It's polarizing.
Is that the sound of all you guys realizing that this is actually a deeper movie than you thought?
It's hard to talk about because it doesn't make much sense. So it's hard to like try to justify it either.
It defies the rules of good and bad.
It's like hard to explain like why it's bad or why it's good.
Can you guys just imagine for a moment mm-hmm. if instead of now the amazing Christopher Lee, who I would want to find another way to get into the movie, but could you just imagine if like it was Darth Maul who fought Yoda and who cut off Anakin's hand, and then like you just have more reason to think of this guy as the one you need revenge against because he took everyone's favorite character, Qui-Gon Jinn, from the series. And then also...
Well, how would we have got General Grievous then?
We needed that.
Another day.
Sam, I believe you looked up, or Ryan, was it you, the other possible cast members who could have taken, or actors who could have taken the Hayden Christensen role of Anakin. Because
I did. I wanted to surprise you guys with this.
Yeah.
My one thought was that did we even need an unknown? And were there more well-known actors out there who were considered for the role?
Okay. Well, here, guys, buckle up. and then after this, I have a bit of audience feedback that feeds into this topic as well. Among the established actors that were auditioned for the role were Ryan Phillippe, Paul Walker, Leonardo DiCaprio, which I knew there was like talk around before the movie came out that he had kind of had a meeting with George Lucas about it. And this was the strangest one. Colin Hanks.
Wow. Interesting.
Whoa.
I could have seen it.
For like a little more of a neurotic Anakin.
You could see Colin Hanks as Anakin?
Yeah. It's kind of like a nice guy Anakin.
Well, that wouldn't work. Ryan Phillippe, I feel like I can't. After I heard that name, I was like, him and Hayden Christensen are the same person.
Yeah, one has frosted tips, though.
Yeah, like have you ever noticed they've never been in the same room at the same time?
Right.
Paul Walker, same answer. Mm-hmm. Like those three. I mean,
They're not good enough actors.
Those three, you're working with the same toolkit.
Yeah, right.
It's just you know. Colin Hanks, I don't really know. Leonardo DiCaprio, it's a whole different ballgame.
That would have made it like kind of next level. That would have put Lucas back in like his like hanging out with Francis Ford Coppola kind of mode. Like there would have had to be some serious work done about explanation of why the characters are doing things. And I'm sure it would have given George a lot of questions that he probably had not thought of. What directing?
Is this movie salvaged in any way if DiCaprio's in it? I can't see it being possible.
If he has script approval, you know, if he's allowed to go in and have somebody punch up Anakin's dialogue, which frankly at that point he would have been able to do. He would have been able to have, you know, that's of a very possible, if we're saying that he did have meetings and did consider it, that's a possible reason it didn't come together. You know, Lucas didn't want to cede that or something, but you know, a dialogue would have helped this a lot, you know?
But Tom Stoppard helped ghostwrite Revenge of the Sith and it didn't help. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like everybody's like fighting an uphill battle with George.
I had no idea that Stoppard
was on. Isn't that shocking?
I'm already sitting, but I'm going to stand up so I can sit down.
I don't think it worked out very well for Jonathan Hale, who was the co-writer on episode 2 with George Lucas. I don't know who he was.
I think they're both uncredited.
Do you think that this is another victim of the idea that they were shooting it so digitally, so blue green screen, that they just shot pieces of stuff not really knowing what was going to go behind them, and then it's kind of became a victim of the technology, whereas like they were just like, how do we make this work now? We don't have like a clear plan.
Possibly.
Yeah. I mean,
I can't imagine that you would be like, okay, yeah, we got it. Like, it doesn't make sense.
I honestly, I think that we were all watching George Lucas like play with his toys in a way, you know, like mm-hmm. I think that we were watching George Lucas play with action figures, and he was focusing on, you know, like, oh, I can make the action figures do this and this and then jump. And then we were saying, like, but the story you have with your action figures isn't airtight. And I think that what George wanted and what we all wanted were not the same thing. And no one was understanding each other. I think, like, truly, I think that's what happened with the whole prequel trilogy. Is that he wanted to play with these toys and this technology in yeah. this world. And right. we wanted to see something that was satisfying from a story standpoint. And right. he wasn't interested.
Well, and also just to, you know, Chris, to go back and respond to your question about, you yeah. know, about what it looked like. I think that probably is true because so much of this was built in a computer. But you also have to remember, like, you know, I think people were moving forward on good faith, because if you look at, you know, George Lucas's output, that had to be the experience on the, you know, original trilogy also. Right. I mean, I know they were on practical sets, and I know sure. that ultimately those effects were being built, you know, practically and, you know, optically and, like, done in camera and everything, but or a lot of them were. But, you know, on those movies, you had to have a full team of yeah. of seasoned, you know, movie makers going, I have no idea if we got it. Right. I know that Harrison's good. You know, I know that sure. he's got chemistry with Carrie, but, like, I don't know if this is, like, what this looks like at all. So George yeah. says to just go with it. And sure. so, like, if you carry that forward to the digital age, it's just like, you know, you're one step further removed from the final product, but you're also going, like, this guy's the genius. He pulled it off before.
That's so. True, because everybody yeah. thought that the original Star Wars was going to be terrible and a bomb.
Right.
So, like, who on set would be like, George, I really don't think you're right this time, though.
Yeah, exactly. You know, like, yeah. Yeah, they're going to say, oh, he knows what he's doing. He's done this yeah. before.
But wouldn't there and have been some reevaluation following The Phantom Menace? Somebody in there didn't like it who was a part of the production. And somebody had to say, maybe we need to find a way to reel him in or have a different perspective or analyze this a little bit more. Because it was a monster hit, but there were a lot of disgruntled people who came out of that film who were older than all of us when they saw it. And you'd think that someone might have come back and reassessed.
Well, I think
paying the bill, though.
Difference here is that he owns all the desk chairs, the computers, the cameras, the wires. It's all his stuff. He's paying all these people. He is who's going to say no to their boss? That's
well, it's like playing Power Rangers at Richie Rich's house.
Right.
If he wants to be the Blue Ranger, he's going to be the Blue Ranger.
Who wants to be the Blue Ranger?
Really? Mike, to answer your question from before about if Leonardo DiCaprio would kind of, like, save this, yeah. I don't think he would save it, but I do think that a star power of that magnitude and, like, acting, he's a very comfortable actor. I think that would have set the audience at ease to see someone on
who
the screen that seems
yes.
comfortable.
Yeah.
That actually leads us into I have a fan question.
Ooh.
This is from David C. in Los Angeles, California. He wanted to know, if Attack of the Clones was made today, who do we think would be good to play the characters?
Oh, wow.
It's a very good question. Uh-huh.
Interesting.
I would keep Ewan.
I'd keep Ewan, for keep sure. Ewan.
Definitely.
I'd keep Ewan.
Sam, would you have Liam Neeson play Anakin?
You know, I hadn't gotten there myself, but as I'm thinking about it, you know, with what they can do with de-aging technology, I absolutely bring him back.
I mean, I think it would be impossible to make this jump because of obviously what would have been done in Phantom Menace, but maybe somebody, I don't know, Michael B. Jordan for Anakin.
Oh, interesting. Mm. Interesting.
I'm trying to think of young yeah. actors yeah. right now no, along
he'd be,
that age
he'd be
that
really
I would
good.
Like.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that'd be fun. For me, it'd be
great. You can ride that, like, that line of, like, angry and, like, yep. motivated.
Yeah.
Adam Driver. I think he'd also be pretty good.
There's, like, if this movie's being made today, there's, like, a 0% chance that Emma Stone is not playing Pat.
I kind of thought that was the case.
That was my go-to thought, was it was going to be Emma Stone.
Well, you know what is interesting, though? You know what would be interesting, actually, just to, if this movie was being made today, mm-hmm. and and you have today's Natalie Portman taking on the role of Princess Amidala, and you know, you change the age of the character, and now, you know, I don't know, I'm not concerned about breaking the story because it's pretty broken, but like she would, like, I think Natalie Portman today is like confident enough to walk into that movie and like
and dictate
be more
some
comfortable
things.
On be more comfortable right. on that type of set. I mean,
sure,
yeah, I would want to see her like do it again. I'm gonna keep thinking though, because I wasn't prepared for this. This is a good question.
Ooh, Andrew Garfield as Anakin.
Oh, dude, no.
No.
I think that could be.
I think that would work. I could see it working.
I feel like it'd be another Hayden.
I think
he's not as bad an actor as Hayden. That's unfair
seasoned,
to Andrew Garfield.
A seasoned Garfield?
Yeah, that's unfair to Garfield. He's a much better actor, but
well, he won't,
for some reason,
he won't
I feel
work
like,
on Mondays.
There we go.
He'd be directed by George again if it was the same situation, and then I don't think that Andrew Garfield with George dialogue would really work out.
Sure.
You know who I think could have actually been good? This might be a strange answer, and he's dead now, so that's sad. But I think Anton Yelchin may have actually been pretty good as well.
I can see that. Oh, what about like the get Chris Pine in there? I think we got another
as who?
As Anakin.
You know, I think he's a little long in the tooth.
Wow. I don't know what that means.
What a hot take that was. I think he's a little old. He's a little old.
Wow.
Wait, I feel like there has to be another female lead actress. I mean, Emma Stone was the first thing that came to mind as well.
Oh, I'm not saying that Emma Stone would be the best. I'm just saying she would be the person.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Easy. Miles Teller and Emma Stone.
Oh,
Miles, I like Miles Teller, actually. I've been circling that. I think Miles Teller would be great. I also, I just lost. No. I'll come back to this.
Charlene Woodley?
I had another name.
No, I don't think so.
No.
What's the guy who just was in that Luc Besson movie?
Dane DeHaan?
DeHaan.
It would be Dane DeHaan.
Dane DeHaan, like, he looks like what they wanted Hayden to look like.
He also essentially plays an Anakin Skywalker in that second Spider-Man movie.
Right.
And even in Chronicle.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, yeah. Ooh, Dane DeHaan.
Would have been.
I could see it.
Could have been a good idea.
Yeah. So Ewan McGregor stays.
Because he's also like something happened to a Leonardo DiCaprio, and then that's Dane DeHaan.
Oh wow,
Leonardo DiCaprio was allergic to shellfish and had. I need to give credit. I stole that joke from a person that may not want to be credited right now, but
I think this is a good opportunity.
Emma Stone, Dane DeHaan, Ewan, and then I guess John Hamm is Jango Fett.
I think you could take his performance from Baby Driver, and that would work as Jango.
There you go.
This is a good opportunity.
I want Jango Fett to be played by the Doof Warrior.
I would say anybody else, any other listeners out there who have questions, comments, send us a question at Droid Podcast on Twitter. You can find us on Facebook, The Droid You're Looking For Podcast. Send us an email, droidpodcast@gmail.com. Send in your questions, your comments. We'd love to hear from you. And of course, as we asked last time, if you can review us on iTunes, it would help boost our stock overall and get us maybe featured in the lead up to The Last Jedi. I do have one minor other thing to talk about that's not that big a complaint, but I'm curious if this stood out to all of you as well. In rewatching it, why did it feel like our world was added into a galaxy far, far away? There was the 50s-style diner. There was droid football.
I knew you would bring that up.
There was droid football in the club on the screen. There's droids playing American football.
There's
Death Six.
And even their conversations are like, how it depends on how big your
pocketbook
is.
Exactly.
Yeah, like, do they have pocketbooks?
what happened to the credits?
You are absolutely right. Maybe that is why this movie feels so distant from the rest of the Star Wars universe, is that it definitely tries to pull from our world as much. Maybe the complaint of the first one was that it was too far away.
So they grounded it with a 50s diner?
Yeah, right.
Yeah, I mean, that whole Dax scene does kind of like break the universe.
Hey, old buddy.
Hello, Dax.
You know what? Because
You know how Obi-Wan's on the desert and he's just kind of just like walking around with Luke and he's like, yeah, my buddy Dax showed me this.
We got to find out in the Solo Obi-Wan movie. Like, it's just an Obi-Wan and Dax buddy prompt through Tatooine.
That's right.
Through the binary
star system.
One
of those burgers, Dax. You know how I like them.
Dax is just like leaning on an old Chevy. Yeah.
You know what we've talked about, sort of the analog to American decades, you know, with the series. And Chris, you know, definitely I credit you with like sort of opening my eyes to like that reading of the series. But like the first, you know, episode 4, A New Hope, like there is definitely some very like American Western like things, you know, like Luke, it's like his speeder is his car, you know, there's definitely like elements of that. But this movie, Clones definitely leans like really far, like they don't mask any of it. They don't form the analog. They just put the literal thing in. It's a greasy spoon diner. That's weird.
Yeah.
It's like an Airstream, too. That's so weird.
And how about just regular human luggage, where they're carrying around suitcases that are just modern suitcases?
You know what's exciting? Carrying around luggage.
I actually was waiting for them to do a dumb gag with R2 having trouble juggling all the luggage for Padme and Anakin.
Oh, that'd be great. I'd love that.
That would be amazing.
Oh, man. Yeah. This doesn't fit into a particular decade. It is also interesting to think about its release in 2002, what was going on in the world. I mean,
sure. Yeah.
It
was just in a weird time, and it was just a weird hurricane of events. I don't know how this thing got made.
Apparently he wrote the script. His first rough draft of the script was turned in 3 months before they started shooting. They went through 3 drafts, and the week before shooting is when they had the final shooting script. Mm-hmm. And then they shot for, you know, whatever it takes, you know, 2 months to make a Star Wars movie.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the biggest movie ever they shot for 2 months in rooms. And you got to, you know, they're shooting right. Yeah, they shot this before 9/11, and it comes out after 9/11. And it's like, maybe there's some weird just like nosebleed of like what everybody's expectations just like shifted. I don't know.
Total disconnect from who they were when they made it, when they shot it, to who they are in the edit room and when they're putting it out there.
Yeah, yeah, that's yes.
I have to think, as this is one of the first completely digitally shot movies, that there's just some, they had to take the hits to go first, and I think maybe some of the process got in the way of what the story could have been and to the movie's downfall, I guess.
So total runtime on this movie, 2 hours and 22 minutes. I checked the time after about an hour in when I rewatched it, and I couldn't believe that I still had another hour and 22 minutes.
How lucky.
It's not a good
story. Were you like, yes, I'm not even halfway done yet?
So much more to indulge in.
Story.
That being said, leads us to our one bit of news for this week as we wrap up this edition of The Droids You're Looking For. The Last Jedi has been announced as having a runtime of 2 hours and 30 minutes. I have a feeling it will not feel as long as Attack of the Clones.
Let us hope.
Guys, the real question this raises, though, about The Last Jedi is, are the Porgs replicants?
Here's another question that I have, and I don't know if maybe the creators of the movies are listening to the podcast, but apparently in Star Wars Made Easy, A Beginner's Guide to a Galaxy Far, Far Away, it said Luke's Island highlights. There's a picture of the Porgs. It says Porgs. Small bird-like Porgs are island's most adorable inhabitants. Cute? Definitely. Tasty? Maybe. I kid you not, that is in the official canon of Star Wars, that they may be tasty.
Whatever makes you feel better, Chris.
I'm not alone.
It's when is your cookbook though coming out, Chris?
What's that? Porgs Made cookbook? Easy? how I lost 50
speaking of
pounds.
Cookbook, I should give full credit. I got that shellfish joke from my wife.
All right, I think that's going to do it for this edition. We are going to be back with some news next time, or potentially we'll get into Revenge of the Sith. We've still got a lot we've got to do before The Last Jedi on December 15th. Chris, Ryan, Sam, what a pleasure, as always, to talk Star Wars with all of you. Can't wait to do it again. This has been the Droid You're Looking For, a Star Wars podcast.
What did I do to deserve this?